purport. Nija Parusha Ikshana Vishaya. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 29, Krishna says, Samoham Sava Bhutetu. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is equal to everyone. In that sense, he has no enemies and no friends. Everyone is enjoying the fruit of reactions of his own work, and the Lord, within everyone's heart, is observing and giving everyone the desired result. However, just as the devotees are always anxious to see the Supreme Lord satisfied in every way, similarly, the Supreme Lord is very anxious to present himself before his devotees. Sri Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 8, Puritranaya sadunam vanashaya chudushkatam dharma samstapanataya sambhavami yuge yuge. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I had bent myself millennium after millennium. Thus, Krishna's appearance is for the deliverance and satisfaction of his devotees. Actually, he does not advent himself simply to kill the demons, for that can be done by his agents. Lord Vishnu's appearance at the sacrificial arena of Maharaj Nabi was just to please the king and his assistants. Otherwise, there was no reason for his being present there. Om Ajnana Chimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. O most worshipable of all, you are the best of all benefactors, and your appearance at saintly King Nabi's sacrificial arena is meant for our benediction. Because you have been seen by us, you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction. Real government is meant to have this effect, that the Supreme Lord himself can appear. Actually, as I'm sure you're aware of, in former times, the demigods used to regularly appear on the planet, attracted by the sacrifices, the yajnas performed. Just like you pay your electric bill or your water bill. Similarly, in a civilized society, everyone knows that the demigods are agents supplying necessities on behalf of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, any government knows how to arrange sacrifices for the proper payment of their debts. Now you don't see any demigods. People don't even accept that such demigods exist. Why is that? Because everyone is so sinful. No one in his right mind wants to come here. Who in their right mind wants to come to a place, a planet, predominated by illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling? No one. Therefore the demigods stay away. And certainly the Supreme Personality of Godhead does not become visible to such sinful people. Is it possible to get some more air in here, or that's about it? We discussed yesterday how in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Yesham ca antikatam papam jnanam punyakarmanam te dvandvam avinirmukta bhajante maham jitrapata. Only those who put a complete stop to sinful activity can take up bhakti yoga with determination. That is why we have our strict regulative principles. We may call the regulative principles austere, but actually they are the minimum for becoming civilized. The regulative principles do not make us transcendentalists. They simply make us human beings. So if you have any doubts, please understand. These four regular principles do not in of themselves make you a devotee of Krishna, but they at least make you a human being. That means without these four regular principles, there's no question of human life. Now, hopefully, we can understand the utterly fallen condition of society today. And that is why you do not see the demigods. we are being governed in societies which have as their actual aim how to forget Krishna and how to produce horrible results in the coming births. Throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, you can read accounts of the Supreme Lord appearing at sacrificial ceremonies performed by great heads of state. The Lord appeared for Prithu Maharaj. The Lord is appearing at King Nabi's sacrifice. That is the purpose of your government, but we have no idea. Therefore, when we read in Bhagavad Gita how Krishna has arranged a great battle where all the kings of the world become annihilated, we feel a little uneasy. Is this really spiritual? We think that spiritual means just let everybody go to hell under very degraded administrations. That's spiritual. If you know anything about political science and all that blah blah, you know that people in so-called democratic societies make a big deal about plurality. That the more people have different views all living together, the better it is for society. A healthy society is in which you have cow slaughterers, vegetarians, this, that, the other, lacto, ovo, carnivorous, vegans, just all expressing their views. And they balance each other that way and make sure that no one view becomes predominant. That's supposed to be the great virtue of democracy. That we should always have this very nice plurality, pluralism. So many different views. And everybody's tolerant of everyone else. Why is that? Because there's no one way. People are so blinded by this notion that as soon as you even tell some people, chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita, they immediately object. Are you trying to say this is one way? You're being impersonal. A few people were telling me that yesterday at the Unconscious Living Festival. You just tell them gently, you're looking for the truth, you're looking for spiritual understanding, you just chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita. You're being impersonal. You're not understanding my needs. You're not understanding my personal dynamics. Anything I say, you just say, chant Hare Krishna. This is being impersonal. Bhagavad Gita. Whatever we say, you just quote Bhagavad Gita. You're not being sensitive to the needs of the people. You're not being sensitive to their personalities. But what is personalism? Who here can give me a definition of personalism? In a nutshell, Krishna tells you what is personalism in Bhagavad Gita. Mamailam sho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana manashastan indriyani prakriti stani karshati. You are mine. You're certainly my parts. Eternally. That is personalism. Any avoidance of that point, that's impersonalism. So here we are reminding people, you are part and parcel of Krishna. You have a relationship with Krishna. You're being impersonal. You're ignoring me. But who are you, anyway, that we are ignoring? Do you know who you are? You tell them, chant Hare Krishna. Why chant Hare Krishna? Are you saying there's only one way? Are you criticizing all the other paths? No, I'm just telling you to chant Hare Krishna, that's all. I didn't say anything about all the other so-called paths. I just said chant Hare Krishna. Why is it that no matter what we say, you just say Krishna, Krishna? You're being impersonal. We don't accept this. There's no question of being personal without relationship. So the ultimate question is, what is the real relationship that we should be acting in? If you don't know that, how can you be personal? We never feel ashamed or hesitant about recommending people to chant Hare Krishna and read Bhagavad Gita. What do you expect from a sick person? You offer them the medicine and they'll protest. They don't appreciate the value of the medicine because they're so sick. Was it your friend I was talking to yesterday? Yes. Sometimes you have to adopt various tactics. So while she was jumping on my case like that, her hand happened to, she was moving her hands on the table, on the book table, and she happened to touch this book I wrote, and she had her hand on it. So I said, just see, your intuition is causing you to touch this book. That means you're supposed to get it. And it worked. Yes. Intuition, that's the thing. My intuition has guided me to this, not you. So then she took the book. So I said, I'll read the introduction. All right, so she got the book. So somehow or other, we have to try to help these people. I was just praying to Krishna, how to help this person. If anytime I say Krishna, she just, you're impersonal, you're just ignoring me. All right. Oh, your hand is on one book. It's your intuition. Follow your intuition. Get this book. What can you do? So, we're never ashamed to tell people to chant Hare Krishna. That is the most personal thing. And why do they protest? Because they are impersonal. What does it mean to be impersonal? No Krishna. As soon as you say Krishna, say no. Actually, there's a personal root of that reaction. Envy of Krishna. Envy is also personal. Who is the prime example of that? So many. Kamsa, Shishupal, Dantavakra. You remember Shishupal's reaction to Krishna being picked as the one to be worshipped in the Rajasuya sacrifice? To be worshipped first in the Rajasuya sacrifice, you have to be the most extraordinary personality present. So, Krishna was picked. And, in fact, even Bhishma Dev, he was present, and he's certified. So I'm known as Bhishma Dev, Devavrata. I have taken the great vow of Brahmachari all my life. But how can I compare it to Krishna? He danced with young ladies in the dead of the night and was not even the slightest agitated. So how can anyone choose someone other than Krishna as the most extraordinary personality present? Even I, Bhishma Dev, Devavrata, would have become disturbed in such circumstances, but not Krishna. Therefore, who can be greater? So Krishna was brought forth as the most worshipable one. And everyone was happy except Shishupal, so envious. I see that there are many great personalities here at this sacrifice. Equipped with full knowledge, austerity. But you have chosen this Krishna. Listening to an inexperienced boy, Nakul. Was it Nakul or Sahadev? Which one? You've listened to this inexperienced Pandava boy presenting Krishna. Who is this Krishna? We can't even figure out what class he's from. Sometimes he acts like a Kshatriya, he fights. Sometimes he acts like a Vaishya, herding cows. Sometimes he even acts like a Shudra, driving a chariot. Who is this Krishna? We can't figure out at all what social standing he has. Of course, he's actually right. Krishna doesn't fit into any of the varnas, although he may display the proper activities of a particular varna just to set the right example. Meanwhile, what's going on? The Pandavas are all tugging at their swords, ready to do him in, but it's very inauspicious if there's killing at the Rajasuya sacrifice. So finally, Krishna just cut his head off with the disc. Then what happened? Wasn't over yet. Dantavakra, Shishupal's brother, he came to avenge the death of Shishupal. Actually, he was Krishna's cousin, Dantavakra. Some way, some relation.
Krishna, you're my cousin, and I shouldn't have to kill you. But you have killed Shishupal. So just like a surgeon removes a boil, so I must kill you, I must remove you. This is personal. Envy of Krishna. And comes up. On the night that Krishna appeared on Janmashtami, Kamsa's pacing the floor, he's in complete anxiety. Absorbed in fear and envy of Krishna. So much so that Narada Muni writes in the seventh canto, he explains in the seventh canto that if only I, Narada Muni, could have the same intensity that these demons have for Krishna, if I could only have the same thing. They're better than me, these demons. They're more intensely absorbed in love of Krishna. This is a devotee, of course. A devotee is always thinking everyone else is serving Krishna better, even the demons. That doesn't mean we should take up the methods of the demons in relation to Krishna. What does Rupa Goswami say? Anyabhilashitat shunyam ganam karma janavritam anukulyena krishnanu shiranam. Pure devotional service means favorable service, not unfavorable. These great demons, they're also related to Krishna in personal relationship, but it's unfavorable. Hate, envy. Nevertheless, still, they're in relation to Krishna. Therefore, Narada Muni advises in the seventh canto, Kaman Sneha Bayat Krodha. However way you want to do it, whether through lust, affection, fear, anger, some or other become absorbed in Krishna. Somehow or other. And what happens if you're a demon who's personally killed by Krishna? You get liberation into the Brahman effulgence. The thing that austere gyanis, mystic yogis are trying so hard, the demons get just by being killed by Krishna. Therefore, what does a devotee want to do with liberation into the impersonal Brahman? The very thing the demons get when they're killed by Krishna. Now, does that mean we should all try to be demons, become killed by Krishna? No, actually, Krishna only kills very special demons, personally. The intensity of envy and anger against Krishna that these demons felt, you cannot imagine. The anger and envy of Kamsa, Hiranyakashipu, Shishupal, Dantavakra, these are special. It's foolish to think that you could actually become that Krishna conscious, even in that unfavorable way. Not possible. Almost all demons are ordinary. Therefore, they're killed by material nature as the agent of the Lord. Strong wind, tidal wave. Demons always think they're safe in the material world. Devotees always know. Our existence in this world is very precarious. What is that song? Bhaja Hare Mana? Kamala? Kamala Tala Mala Jiva. Yes. Translation. Just like a drop of water situated on the petal of a lotus flower, very precarious. That means that's how our existence in this world is. So precarious. Any moment a drop of water on a lotus petal can fall off. Similarly, any moment our material arrangements can come crashing in. Devotee knows that. Why? Because Krishna says in the Gita, Dukalam Shashvatam, this material world is temporary and miserable. So we know, we don't look for happiness and fulfillment in this kind of world. No one here is doing that, right? None of you is looking for happiness and fulfillment in this world. When the maker of this world, the creator of this world, has certified unfit for human habitation, unfit for the habitation of the spirit soul, more specifically. Just like you go by some abandoned building. I don't know if they have any in Perth. And maybe there's some sign put out by the government in front. You know, stay away, danger. Very old house. I think when I was going from Cessnock back to Sydney, we passed by one old mine. And it was a big brick structure, building, situated nearby or on top of where an old mine shaft was. So since they had already plundered the earth, and there was nothing more left to exploit, they had abandoned the building. And obviously they calculated it was cheaper just to leave the building standing there than dismantle it. So they had a fence around it and a guard, a hired guard for this completely abandoned building, because the company was afraid, of course, of being sued if someone wandered onto the property and was injured. So they had a guard there, security guard. So this material world's like that, a dangerous place, and Krishna is giving you information. Don't try to live here. Don't try to be happy here. But demons think, oh, it's not a bad place at all. Everybody can try to find their own enjoyment. Death will never come to us. And even if it does come to us, we'll automatically become humans again, or who knows what. In any case, it doesn't matter. Just like Perth here. Seems so nice and safe in this remote part of the world. One little shake of the ground, and the coastline goes off into the ocean. One little insignificant little shake of the ground. And in a few moments, so many decades of development is finished. And what does everybody think? Oh, nature would never do that to us. I'll never forget, as a young child, watching on television some report of an earthquake in Argentina or Chile or somewhere, and they showed the farmers shaking their fists towards the sky, like, God, how could you do this to us? If we could, we'd get you. This is a demon. We're so great. How can nature do anything to us? Why would nature want to give us a hard time? Similarly, people walk around in these festivals of unconscious living with this same demoniac attitude. We are all so great. We're so tuned in. We're so understanding of all the new ways of health and lifestyle. Now you may say, how can that be demoniac? It seems to be kind of motor goodness-y. Yeah, these people are more spiritual, you know, it's easier to preach to them. You think so, huh? Just go there and give a try. Of course, we are trying anyway, because we're servants of Lord Chaitanya. But don't think that they're actually more spiritual, more understanding, more open-minded. No. It's just another chance to try and preach. So, why is this demoniac? Any attempt to live life separate from the Vedic injunctions is demoniac. Any attempt to find your own truth, find your own lifestyle, which is not in reference to Shastra, that's demoniac. What does Krishna say in the Gita? Is Shastra vidim ucrija vartate kama karata. Nasasidam abapnoti nasukam na paramgat. One who throws out the Shastra and thinks, I shall be happy, such a person will never get perfection, happiness, or the supreme destination. Impossible. So it is demoniac to set yourself up as the authority. We all know what's best for us. This person I was talking about earlier was telling me that yesterday, that each one of us has to find what's right for us as an individual. You just can't tell everyone, chant Hare Krishna. That's impersonal, because we're all different. You're ignoring all the personal varieties when you tell everyone to read Bhagavad Gita, chant Hare Krishna. Each one of us has a different truth. You've heard this before? Suppose I say, all of you residents of Perth, you all have different laws to follow. Each one of you should have your own driving laws, road code you follow. Each one of you should pay your rates. Call them rates here, or taxes. Each one of you should pay your rates in your own way. Everyone will say, this is insanity. No, you're a resident of Perth. You have to follow the laws of the council. You cannot prescribe what your rates are. The council prescribes. You cannot prescribe what your individual road code is. So why does everybody think they can dare to individually prescribe what Dharma is? The spirit soul is equal in everyone. Only Krishna can lay down the law because Krishna includes everyone. See, the fear is that how can anyone know what's good for everybody? This is what's underneath all this stuff. How can anyone know what's good for everybody? It's impossible. Therefore, just let everybody do what they think is best as an individual, because no one is powerful enough to understand what's good for the whole. But Krishna in the Gita says, Vedaham Samachitani Vartamanani Charjuna Bhavishyani Chabrutani Mam Tu Veda Nakashtuna. As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything, past, present, future. I know all living entities, but no one knows me. Krishna as the whole is easily understanding of what is best for the parts. Therefore, once again, we try to explain to people. You talk about being holistic, but you have no idea of the whole. How can you be holistic? If you actually understand the whole, then, as a part, you know what to do. You know that your duty is prescribed by the whole. That is what Krishna is doing in the Gita. The Supreme Absolute Truth, the complete whole, Personality of God, it is telling the part, Arjuna, don't be bewildered by your direct sense perception. To your vision, it looks like fighting in this war will produce complete disastrous results. But that's only the vision of your imperfect senses. I can see the whole picture, and I tell you, this war is great. That's why people don't like Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying, I see all the ramifications. I see all the sociological, political reactions. I know what I want. I know my purpose. And I tell you, this war is the best thing happening. Go fight. People say, how can this be a spiritual book? You've heard that? You've thought that sometimes? Meanwhile, our so-called human society is absorbed in wars everywhere. Hot and cold wars, wars of liberation, wars of this, wars of that. We think, however, that war in Bhagavad Gita, that's primitive. We are also advanced. If you accept that there is a complete whole, then that means you as a part are defined by that whole. And that's what Krishna is doing in the Gita. Krishna is telling Arjuna, it's my energy, the battlefield, the soldiers, the armies, they're all my energy. I know what to do with my energy. I want these guys dead on the battlefield. That's the best thing for them. And of course we know, anyone who died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra in the presence of the Lord, they went back to Godhead. Krishna knows what he's doing. Krishna wanted a government that was righteous. That means a government that followed Shastra. A government that developed people's Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness. So he arranged this whole scenario just to bring about that result. So that Yudhisthira would become king of the world and then Pritchard Maharaj. Krishna also arranged to end the God-conscious government of the world. It was time for Kali Yuga to come. So there was a conspiracy by the age of Kali personified how to get rid of Pritchard Maharaj. You remember how Pritchard Maharaj had said to Kali, you can live in places where sinful activity is performed. That's the only place you can hang out. Nowhere else in my land can you reside. But the age of Kali personified had a very difficult time finding even a few places like that in Prichit Maharaj's world empire. So therefore they had to make, the demons had to make a conspiracy how to get rid of Prichit Maharaj. Of course, it's all done with the sanction of the Supreme Lord. Why? Because it was time for Kali Yuga to come. Living entities want Kali Yuga. Can you believe that you actually wanted circumstances like the way the world is in now? If you didn't want it, you wouldn't be here. You wanted to enjoy separately from Krishna, and this is the result. People want Kali Yuga. They want the devilish delights that Kali Yuga offers. So therefore Krishna has a Kali Yuga for them, where you can become very technologically advanced while absorbing yourself in sinful activity. The Lord arranged to remove Prichit Maharaj. I mean, there's no way that a pure devotee like Prichit Maharaj had to submit to the curse of this Brahmin boy Sringi. No way. But because he knew it was the plan of the Lord, he submitted. A pure devotee is not subject to any curse. Why did Srila Prabhupada depart from this world when he did? Because Krishna wanted him to go. No question of Prichit Maharaj being subject to a curse. It also, by having Prichit Maharaj cursed to die in 7 days, it gave a chance for Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. And we're benefiting from that. Who can understand the plan of the Lord? That was Bhishmadev's conclusion. We were discussing in Sydney how when Bhishmadev was lying on his bed of arrows about to give up his body by his own will, the Pandavas were gathered around him, and he was so happy that the Pandavas were victorious, that Yudhisthira would be emperor. Even though he had fought against them, he knew they were right. He knew what Krishna wanted. So Bhishmadev was so full of affection and happiness that his dear Pandavas were the victors. And he began to think of all the miseries the Pandavas had went through. How can this be? Arjuna, the great fighter with the Gandiva bow, the friend of Krishna, Yudhisthira, the son of religion, Dharmaraj, Bhima, the great fighter with the club, and Draupadi, she's practically the goddess of fortune. How do they have to go through all those miseries? So Bhishmadev concluded, it can only be the inconceivable plan of the Lord, and there's nothing more to be said about it than that. Therefore, we should not protest when the demoniac governments of today crumble. We should not think, oh, why is Krishna doing this? If you try to live a life separate from Krishna, whether it's a political life or a New Age life or whatever, everything will crumble. You cannot live by ignoring the laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no doubt about that. And don't accuse Krishna of being partial. Krishna is equal to all. Samaham sarvabhuteshu. I envy no one. I'm not partial to anyone. I'm equal to all. But if you render devotional service to me, that's something special. But everyone has a chance to render devotional service. This is personalism. Everyone has a chance. And if you take that chance and render personal service to Krishna, he takes personal notice of you. What can be more personal than that? But if you immediately protest when someone says, chant Hare Krishna, read Bhagavad Gita, if you immediately protest, no, you're ignoring me. Then you get treated in a certain way by Krishna. You get to try to personally relate to the illusory energy instead of personally relating to Krishna and Krishna's spiritual energy. You see, in the beginning of the seventh canto, there was a question by Pritchett Maharaj that we just heard about the Lord incarnating to kill the demons, seemingly on behest of the demigods. It would seem that the Lord is siding with the demigods, showing them favor. How can the Lord be partial? Partiality is the symptom of someone under the influence of the modes of material nature. Then you discriminate. These are my friends, these are my enemies. Now, if the Lord is transcendental, how can he be partial like this, seemingly taking the side of the demigods to exterminate the demons, taking the side of Indra? Hiranyakashipu thought like that. Who is this Vishnu taking the side of the demigods and killing Hiranyaksha, my brother? This Vishnu is so partial. He's easily bribed by the demigods, just like a child is bribed by giving him a laddu. Anyway, who cares for this Vishnu? When I cut off his head, it'll very much satisfy my brother Hiranyaksha, who was so fond of sucking blood. This is Hiranyakashipu talking. Accusing Vishnu of being partial. But the fact is, the devotee of the Lord is not partial, and certainly the Lord is not partial. Partiality is a symptom of the modes of material nature. Krishna is equal to everyone. But if you treat the Lord in a certain way, no matter who you are, he responds. If you want to be a demon, Krishna treats you like a demon. If you want to be a devotee, Krishna treats you like a devotee. So it's a very interesting chapter, that first chapter of the seventh canto. Is the Lord partial or impartial? And in that chapter, you also hear about Nara Muni's praise of the demons, how absorbed in hate of Krishna these special demons are. If only I could have that much bhava intensity in my relationship with Krishna. Somehow or other become attached to Krishna, whether through lust. Actually, the gopis were not attached to the Lord out of lust. It seems like that, but they had no material desires. Kubja, she was. You know the story of Kubja. She was an ugly hunchback lady. And what did she offer to the Lord? Sandalwood face. Yes. It was meant for the king, for Kamsa. Yes. So she pleased Krishna in that way. And then what did Krishna do? He put his 2 feet over her feet. And he put his hands under her chin. Pressing down with his feet and pressing up with his hands, he straightened out her hunchback. And she turned into the most devastating beauty. And then she began to smile flirtatiously at Krishna. Krishna, when are you coming to my house? In one purport in the tenth canto, is one play-by-play account of the conversation between Kubja and Krishna. Krishna's saying to her, "Why are you talking like this to me on the public road?" And she's saying, "Don't blame me, you touched me first." "You agitated me, don't blame me." And then Krishna's asking, "Why are you inviting me to your house for dinner?" What will happen there? So in this way, as you know from the Krishna book, while she's soliciting Krishna like this, Krishna's not even looking at her. He's looking away at his boyfriends, his coward boyfriends. And while not looking at her, he looks at his boyfriends and says, "Certainly you are a suitable girlfriend for relieving a man of all his anxieties. I will come to your house later." And then he leaves, showing great detachment, because one of the opulences of Krishna is his great unlimited renunciation. So even in a situation like that, with a devastating beauty tugging at his cloth, saying, "Later, I will come later." He just leaves her with some sweet words. "You are very capable of satisfying, relieving all anxieties. But later." This is Krishna, the supreme enjoyer. So Kubja, she had some material desire, but because she focused it on Krishna, she became purified. Krishna did come to her house and completely established her relationship in pure love of God. So Narada Muni says, however you approach Krishna, do it. Whether it's lust, affection, family affection, bodily affection, fear, anger, just become absorbed in Krishna. He's glorifying the emotional intensity obtained by connecting with Krishna. But of course, Rupa Goswami advises us, serve Krishna favorably as Krishna wants to be served. Any questions? Yes. What are you saying that in reference to? Krishna says in the Gita to Arjuna, Mama Nushmara Yujjam Cha, fight and think of me. Arjuna was a Kshatriya, it was his duty to fight. So Krishna told him, do your duty while thinking of me. Any other questions? Yes. If I said Prithu, I meant Prithu. Anything else? Yes. Focusing on what you're doing, that is focusing on Krishna. Otherwise, why are you doing what you're doing? Just like when you're adjusting the microphone here. You're doing it to serve Krishna. So does that mean you should kind of like cover your hand over your eyes? I can't look at what I'm doing. I gotta think of Krishna. Krishna, are you there? I'm doing this for you. I don't want to lose sight of you. No, you're fully focused on arranging the microphone out of service to Krishna. You've heard, you're around, you see the deities, you hear class. That's very important, so that you remember who you're serving. And then while you're doing something, in the Gita, Prabhupada tells you the appropriate attitude. You think, I have been appointed to adjust this microphone by Krishna. Let me do it with full concentration. Okay, I'll read it to you. Chapter 18. Chetasasarva Karamani. Chaitasa sarva kamani mai sanyasya matpara buddhi yagama vasritya machita satatam bhava. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. Now, how do you act in full consciousness of Krishna? How do you adjust a microphone in full consciousness of Krishna? Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness, he does not act as master of the world. It's a new thing for us, not acting as master of the world. Just like a servant, one should act fully under the direction of the Supreme Lord. A servant has no individual independence. He acts only on the order of the master. A servant acting on behalf of the Supreme Master is unaffected by profit and loss. He simply discharges his duty faithfully in terms of the order of the Lord. Not that you can just say, anything's my duty. No, you do your duty in terms of the order of the Lord. Now, one may argue that Arjuna was acting under the personal direction of Krishna. But when Krishna is not present, how should one act? So ask that question. Okay. Very good. Very good question. If one acts according to the direction of Krishna in this book, as well as under the guidance of the representative of Krishna, then the result will be the same. The Sanskrit word matpada is very important in this verse. It indicates that one has no goal in life save and except acting in Krishna consciousness just to satisfy Krishna. So when you're adjusting the microphone, you're thinking, my only goal is to satisfy Krishna. And while working in that way, one should think of Krishna only. I have been appointed to discharge this particular duty by Krishna. I have been appointed to adjust this microphone by Krishna. So Prabhupada says, while acting in such a way, one naturally has to think of Krishna. This is perfect Krishna consciousness. One should, however, note that after doing something whimsically, he should not offer the result to the Supreme Lord. That sort of duty is not in the devotional service of Krishna consciousness. One should act according to the order of Krishna. This is a very important point. That order of Krishna comes through succession from the bona fide spiritual master. Therefore, the spiritual master's order should be taken as the prime duty of life. If one gets a bona fide spiritual master and acts according to his direction, then one's perfection of life in Krishna consciousness is guaranteed. So, if you are carefully adjusting the microphone, naturally you have to think of Krishna. I want to get this right for Krishna's pleasure. If you're sweeping the floor in the temple, I want to sweep it right for Krishna's pleasure. And you pay attention to how careful you do it. Wouldn't you like it if someone would carefully pay attention to you? In the material world, isn't that what every man hopes for? Some lady who will come along and be attentive to his every need. That's every man's dream. So we all know how we like to be served with great attention. So you take that same propensity and you apply it to Krishna. You serve Krishna with great attention and care. And you'll find that Krishna likes to see how painstaking you'll be in your devotional service. Some days things just don't work out right. Such a battle. You can't find the broom to sweep the floor. You want to go on Sankirtan and the car breaks down. And so many things like that. It's just an opportunity to show care in the service of the Lord. Rather than just say, ah, the hell with it. Who cares? This is not for me. Why am I going through all these problems and difficulties? No, you think, it's for Krishna. I've got to do my best, even though it's difficult. It's for Krishna's pleasure. So, our temple is a training place how to teach people to serve Krishna for Krishna's pleasure in a very attentive way. That is Krishna consciousness. Anything else? Just like so many of you are working hard preparing the meals for the festival, serving the meals at the festival. How many plates were yesterday? 660. Increase of 60 from the day before. More today. So, Dayasara was telling me 1,000 people came Thursday, and of those 1,000 people, more or less 600 people, including the staff, they got plates of prasad. I was telling that to one businessman who's across the way from me who has promised to get a Bhagavad Gita before he leaves. He spent his whole time talking to me, you know, guy in suit and tie, and, you know. So he's promised to get a Gita. So I was telling him the statistics. Approximately 600 out of the 1,000 people who came, they bought prasad. Wow, that's great business. What a percentage. How do you guys do it? So anyway, I never thought of being a vegetarian, and he said, I pass by your restaurant sometimes, your Food for Life place, but you know, I didn't go in because, you know, I thought, you know, only people who dressed like you guys went inside. But every day I'm eating at your place. So nice. Every day I'm going to your stand and getting food. So that care to prepare the prasad and serve it with love and devotion, that is Krishna consciousness. It's not easy all the time. Sometimes it's hot. It's hot outside. Then you go into the festival place, the hall, and it's very gusty there because of a very crude air conditioning system, blowing gusts of cold air around, very easy to get sick. And these are austerities, but we're trying to serve Krishna. We're trying to focus on Krishna's senses. We arrange what we can as best as possible so that, for example, we don't get sick. We're not fools, but we know that ultimately this material world is an impossible place. So we do the best we can and focus on how to give pleasure to Krishna. We do that all our life, then we go back to Godhead at the end. Therefore, a real devotee sees difficulties as a chance to serve Krishna better. People are always talking in the business world how a real good company uses problems with the customer as an opportunity to make a lifelong customer. Just like I have a laptop. It's an IBM. So there's some minor problem with it. So I call them on the telephone. And immediately they said, sir, we're going to immediately send a courier to get that computer and bring it in. Wow. Immediately the man said, I'm sending someone over there right now, within the hour. 5 minutes later the phone rang. It was the person who arranged the courier. Sir, I've heard you have a problem with your IBM laptop. I'm the one who arranges the courier. Within the next half hour someone will be there. Sure enough, someone came to the door. Sir, may we have your laptop? Took it away. So naturally, you know, from the material point of view, you think, well, this is the company I want to stay with. They, you know, they make me feel important. They take care of my needs so quickly. So a devotee thinks, well, I should serve Krishna like that. So the very good companies, they make a policy of that. They use a problem with a customer as a chance to make a lifelong customer. You have a problem with your IBM laptop, we're going to treat you in such a way that you'll never think of getting any other kind of computer in your life. They use the opportunity as a way to deepen their relationship with you. We're going to show you what we're really about. You're never going to look anywhere else to buy. You're going to be hooked for life. So that's the way we want to deal with people. Even if they find some problem, if we've made a little mistake, we use it as an opportunity to make them lifelong attached to Krishna, eternal, lifelong. However they come across our way, we want to deepen their relation with Krishna somehow or other. And we also should take up that service attitude that the mundaners have. They were so diligent. After I taught the technician, then the clerk calls. They do it on purpose. I've read business books where they actually do this on purpose. It's called the overkill. They shower the attention on you far beyond what's required, just so you'll never forget. You know about this, yes? First the technician says, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Then somebody else calls, I'm making sure it's being taken care of. Then after they picked up the laptop, someone else calls,
did the courier come? Is everything all right? They just really just lay it on you. And naturally, even though you know what they're doing, it's true, you'll think, I'll never go to any other company, right? It's natural. So we should serve Krishna like that. We should serve Krishna in such a way that, as if we're thinking, Krishna, don't go to any other devotee to ask for service. I'm yours. I'm your servant. That's the way we should act. So you do that here in the Perth temple, and so many people will join. All right. All glories to the Prabhupada.